You are listening to EG Podcasts. He's Carl Tomusk.
And he's Jess Harold.
And this is...
The Year According to Diary.
Now, after the celebrity mourning year that was 2016, what we all wanted was a nice, cathartic 12 months full of fun and happiness and rainbows. But we didn't get that, did we, Carl?
No, 2017 wasn't an easy year. It was an arduous sequel to 2016, The Empire Strikes Back of the Trump-Brexit saga. There were terrorist attacks across the UK. Kim Jong-un was trigger-happy. Donald Trump was Twitter-happy. Catalonia tried declaring independence, and the UK was trying to do something similar. Westminster was embroiled in scandal, as were the two major US institutions of Washington and Hollywood. That's not to say it was all bad. Measles was eradicated in the UK, but royal wedding fever wasn't. Coventry was named UK City of Culture for 2021. We got a new £10 note. It even had an out-of-context quote on the back. And, of course, David Attenborough was back for Blue Planet 2. And property, things were also getting a little heated. We had the cheese grater sold. We had the walkie-talkie sold, both to Hong Kong investors. CIC bought Logicor, BNP Paribas Real Estate and Struts merged, as did Hammerson and Intu, Uniball and Westfield merged. People just couldn't get enough of M&A.
But we're not here to talk about all that.
No,
of
course not.
With all that going on in the real world, at least there was one refuge we could all retreat to. A safe space, free of controversy, misery and all-round depression. A place where everyone knows your name. We are, of course, talking about Diary. The page that survived the EG rebrand with its name intact, following much discussion, and continued to deliver those wry, sideways glances at our merry little industry, complete with gratuitous and often forced references to old TV programmes and blockbuster movies. Hashtag prop culture. While the so-called mainstream media was busying itself with Brexit, North Korea and fake news, these are the real stories. The important stories. The diary stories. So, 2017 then. Like many years before it, it began with January. Carl, can you remember that far back?
I can, actually.
Excellent.
Diary's close friends across the pond kicked off the year talking about one president-to-be, but here we were preoccupied by someone entirely different. Former Housing Minister Gavin Barwell.
Well, then actual Housing Minister Gavin Barwell.
But things took a turn later in the year. But back in January, when life was easier and a little more simple, we learned that Barwell once knew how to throw a mean party. Maybe even keep a bar well stocked. Get it?
I get it.
Savile's Lucian Cook claimed the pair cooked up the world's biggest vodka jelly when they were both at Cambridge 25 years ago. But those days seemed to be over for Barwell. Later in January, he tweeted he was celebrating his 45th birthday listening to a debate on the local government finance bill. We would have been worried about poor Barwell, but he added hashtag living the dream, so he seemed fine. So no doubt that would last all year.
I'm sure it did.
Well, I mean, spoiler alert, but...
Well, we'll get to that later.
We'll get to that later. Elsewhere, we follow the high-stakes adventure of architect John Beswick and entrepreneur Nico Carey, who rode 730 miles from London... How do you actually pronounce that?
London to... Ooh, Teen? Tyne?
Tyne?
Teen.
Teen?
T-I-G-N-E-S for any spelling enthusiasts.
So we're going to keep this in, or are we going to edit this out?
let's keep it in. Why not?
Okay. Show how uncultured we really are.
Yeah, exactly. Now, why were they going all the way to Tyne/Teen?
They went there to attend Propski.
Marvelous.
Jess, can you guess what they rode on?
Vodka and Red Bull?
No. A penny farthing.
Of course. What else?
Of course. The pair's cycling strategy was right on the money, and they raised £400 per stroke along the way. And finally, we rounded up the month, learning from one of our favorite news sources, the Daily Mash, that there are plans to convert every building in London into a pret-a-manger by 2020. I pronounced that correctly. Considering Diary has one just outside the office, who are we to doubt them?
Who are we indeed? Oh, no, wait, there's two outside now. February truly began for Diary when it flipped over the page of its superhero calendar from insurance brokers Prism Solutions to find sales manager Matthew Small dressed as childhood favourite Banana Man. Well, that's my childhood favourite anyway. I can't speak for Carl.
No, I'm from a whole different generation. Everyone at the office keeps reminding me.
Ah, these young whippersnappers. Surely the rest of the year could only be downhill from Banana Man. We did learn a new word, though. Lady Scraper. As well as being the name of a hardcore musician whose records include The Death of Mary Poppins, among others we couldn't possibly name on a family podcast, a lady scraper, it turns out, is a skyscraper with a curvaceous shape. Diary's efforts to poll the office on how widespread the term lady scrapers actually is yielded only one response. Stop saying lady scrapers. And that's advice we can all live by. It wasn't the only addition to our lexicon either. Later in the year, we had cause to look up jubilators. They're retirees in search of a full and happy life. One wonders if any jubilators have ever found jubilation in lady scrapers. February also brought a splash of celebrity glamour to the diary page, with name checks for Fred Dinage, Gary Neville, and Donald Trump. Sorry, you just can't get away from him. Particularly not if you happen to be a member of his Mar-a-Lago club in Florida. Like New York developer Richard Lefrak. Lefrak was said to have been a little startled when sounded out by the president about beating a $20 billion estimate for a project close to Trump's heart. Yes, the wall. Diary thought it only fair to share the opportunity with any developers out there looking for a big project who don't give a damn about a bad reputation.
Good one.
Thank you.
Anyway, March means MIPIM.
It's the sincerity with which you say that that really makes it.
The script in front of me doesn't say sincerity, so let's move on to MIPIM.
Yes.
March means MIPIM. It's where you go to grab the industry's attention. So while our colleagues were busy launching EG's new brand, EG, Diary snooped out what everyone else was up to. Sutton Council's stand proudly showcased South London, with Southwark in the foreground even. Mm. The Shard rising majestically over the Thames. But what was in the background?
I can't recall. It was so long ago.
It was a long time ago, but somewhere in the background sat Sutton.
Ah.
What Sutton failed to
mention... I see what they've done there.
What Sutton failed to mention was that its small corner of London was far off in the distance, yearning to be spotted behind the skyscrapers. It seemed a little disingenuous, but who am I to comment? Well, so we'll move swiftly on. Meanwhile, the Manchester stand decided to relocate to the beach and hand out fish and chips in a colander. Was it a reference to Manchester by the Sea? Was it, as one cruel passerby said, Manchester trying to be Blackpool? We don't know. But Manchester, if you're listening, just be yourself. You don't need Blackpool or Casey Affleck to prop you up.
Quite right.
Animals also featured heavily in March. We learned about urban birding, a hobby that Blur and Gorillaz frontman Damon Albarn loves. It combines the best of covering the world in concrete and caring about the environment. Sit on a roof garden, cocktail in hand, take out your high-tech camera or your impulse-bought drone and snap away. Extra points for anyone who spots something other than a pigeon. And over in Trumpington, South Cambridge, a family of otters showed up at Countryside's Great Knighton.
Yeah.
Yes. Development. Andrew Carrington, managing director of Strategic Land, called it such exciting news for the company. Let's hope they welcome all their human residents just as warmly.
I loved Trumpington when I was a kid. I don't remember any otters, though. Diary was completely flawed in April, and that's flawed with a double O-R. We're flawed with an A-W every month. The hot topic of the month was office carpet, with what just about edges the hotly contested field for the best press release of the year. It came from Heckman & Waik FB, advertising its star product, the Constellation range. No mere carpet tile. Constellation is available in different coloured planks that offer endless possibilities to create inspirational designs that capture the imagination. But what really makes this one stand out is the possibility they hadn't foreseen. The fact that the photo accompanying the press release was of the wrong carpet. It wasn't Constellation at all. Then again, maybe they were alive to this all along, as the so-called mistake scored them a diary name check 2 weeks in a row. Completing the carpet bombing was Germany's Carpet Concept, which wisely avoided the photo trap and instead concentrated on employing poetic language in its release. Plush is a thing of the past, it proclaimed. A revolutionary mix of minimal and sumptuous. A touch of Chanel and a pinch of popcorn. Eco-Iku-S, the delightfully named carpet, is an example of how carpets can be conceived in new ways. Then things all went a bit Cantonar. Whether a drifting school of fish in the ocean or exquisite boucle couture, there are no limits to association. Indeed. There are no limits to the Fast and the Furious films either, and news reached us that the franchise had racked up £420 million in damage, largely comprised of 31 destroyed buildings. And a chunk of the carnage took place in London, Fast and the Furious 6, in case you're keeping track. Another email, titled "Shocking Items British Landlords Have Found After Tenant's Departure," which came from, of all people, blind manufacturers Hillary's, didn't include a box set of the Fast and the Furious films. But it did boast Betamax tapes, as well as pet ashes, and a somewhat delicately phrased taxidermy beaver. You'd think the jewellery box full of human nail clippings would be as horrific as it gets, but then again, Hillary's were shrewdly holding a few things back for Halloween. More on that later.
Now,
I really hope they did the full Naked Gun routine when they found the taxidermy beaver.
Me too. Well, the taxidermy beaver doesn't really bother me. What bothers me as one of these young folks is the Betamax.
Betamax?
Yes.
Do you want to know what that was?
Explain that.
Well, it was kind of like, how to put it? So, if you remember iPods.
I do.
So you remember there were some other people who made things like iPods.
I do.
And you remember that they weren't as good or popular and they kind of quickly disappeared.
I do.
So back when we had VHS, some poor manufacturer or other also tried to popularize Betamax and it didn't quite pan out.
So it was like the Blu-ray and HD DVD?
Exactly like that.
Right.
Betamax was the HD DVD to VHS's Blu-ray.
I see. Moving swiftly on to May. In May, EG flew to the Middle East, which was once again chosen to host the Middle East Real Estate Forum.
Good choice.
It was. So Diary naturally tagged along. We couldn't say no to our first big conference in the Middle East. We learned that in Dubai, you can get a call at 4 p.m., from someone flying into the city the next morning and have a helipad built in time for their arrival. Later, we overheard an argument over what shape a new island in the UAE should take, whether it should be a seahorse or a starfish.
Starfish, every time.
Well, I don't know. I'm pretty partial to seahorse.
Okay, whatever floats your boat.
Well, anyway, we were, of course, a little preoccupied trying to figure out what shape our island would take after Brexit. Closer to home, Andy Murray had some time on his hands this year and showed up on our radar with an exciting property investment. The three-time sports personality of the year invested in mortgage lender Landbay, and in typical Murray exuberance, he announced...
I hope you've got an impression lined up for this.
I don't, but I'll try to mimic his enthusiasm.
Yeah, go for it.
I have invested in Landbay for a second time, exercising my preemption rights. The future for the company looks good. And I'm pleased to be able to maintain my shareholding as the company grows.
It's almost like he's here in the room.
He really is. Murray.
Thanks, Andy. See you later.
Bye. Murray might have lacked some of the enthusiasm Dyer expects from its sports personalities, but a building we bumped into on a steamy May morning made up for it. Endurance Land and Aberdeen Asset Management's 38 Chancery Lane development tried seducing Dyer with signs reading, "Your old office doesn't love you anymore. Get over it. I'm ready for you." And, "It's okay. I know you stare at me when I'm not looking." We told 38 Chancery Lane we're happily married to Hoburn and went on our way. And finally, in May, Diary made a mistake.
Surely not.
No. We did, actually, that time. A shocking mistake at that. We wrote an ode to the ALSK-190 heavy lift crane at Capco's Earl's Court Regeneration.
It's a heck of a crane.
It really is. It's a real thing of beauty. But in their enthusiasm, Diary's crane correspondent, who will remain nameless, wrote that the juggernaut has a winch speed of 150 miles per hour. We should have said meters. And that's when we sacked our crane correspondent.
Indeed. Sad day. In June, while most eyes were upon Theresa May's foot-shooting general election campaign, one of Diary's colleagues had his mind on less current affairs. Thus, Diary brought you cutting-edge commentary on development strategy circa 1973. Our colleague, who won't be named lest his weekend viewing habits become the talk of the Twittersphere, was watching a vintage episode of Parkinson on BBC4. With the kind of powerhouse panel you just don't get nowadays in the age of Graham Norton and his endless procession of Hollywood A-listers, Parky had Dowager Countess of Grantham Dame Maggie Smith, then Poet Laureate Sir John Betjeman, nothing says Saturday nights like a poet, and carry-on stalwart and infamous speaker of the greatest line in all of literature, Kenneth Williams. So of course the conversation turned to planning, and Kenneth was not a fan of the then modern development trends, railing with the passion of Caesar himself on all the dreadfulness and blight. No doubt any watching town planners of the time were furious, and all had it in for him. Back in 2017, the Land Securities Group hit upon the bold strategy of renaming itself exactly what everybody calls it anyway. EG appreciated this most sincere of flattery. And post-election, Gavin Barwell, remember him, also underwent a bit of a rebrand. From Housing Minister to...
Former Housing Minister.
Yes, exactly right. Perhaps he should have got a hold of the a copy of the book How to Win a Marginal Seat by Gavin Barwell. Oh. Terrible to have something like that come back to haunt you, but at least now he had the plot and time on his hands to write the natural sequel.
There's so many sequels in this podcast.
There
now.
Are many sequels. It's the way of the world these days. Everything's a sequel.
Everything in 2017 especially.
Yes.
Now, we're not usually in the habit of getting self-indulgent, like making a podcast about the year.
By rehashing old diary columns from throughout the year. No, definitely no, not in the habit of being self-indulgent.
But, you know, let's do that for a second. Because in July, Legal & General started a chili growing competition, and Diary couldn't resist the puns. At the time, we wrote, Jess, can you keep a tally on the puns?
I will try my best. It's not going to be easy, but I will try.
Let's go. The heat is on at L&G's real assets division as they go green-thumbed in a red-hot desktop chili-growing competition. The rules are eye-wateringly stringent, with only pot sizes 20 centimeters by 10 centimeters permitted and germination time strictly limited to between 29th of June and 3rd of August. Since variety is the spice of life, experimentation with seeds has been permitted, though genetic modification may result in fingers being burnt.
Ding.
The team is hot to trot, Diary understands, and with Google having implemented something similar, they're bang on trend. That's not quite a pun.
No, I'm not allowing that one. I'm not having that one.
Judges will test the produce on spiciness and aesthetics, but it will be in the event of a draw that they will really turn up the heat.
Ding.
The winner will then be decided by a chili-eating competition, with the first to flinch being extinguished, and the winner riding their blazing saddle to glory.
Ding.
Diary promises to keep you all updated on the results. In the meantime, we'll try to conjure up some new puns, but for now, we're sure you'll agree we're on fire.
Ding! That was possibly an all-time Diary record of 11 puns in one story.
Now, we achieved 11 puns, but we never achieved a follow-up to that story.
A follow-up to that story?
Did we?
I don't think so.
We did say that we would keep everyone up to date on how their chili growing was going.
Yes, we did say that, and I'm not sure that we actually managed to do that.
Let's ignore that.
But at least we know that 11 is the record, and we can try and shoot for that benchmark in a Diary story in 2018.
I'm hoping for 15.
15. The bar has been set.
Let's do it. We also learned that Bill Hughes, head of real assets at L&G, holds the record for catching the biggest salmon in Scottish waters, a whopping 36.5 pounds. Like Barwell's vodka jelly, we couldn't confirm the claim, but Hughes assured us that Trout and Salmon magazine covered the news back in 2016. But as we all know, the summer months are always about creatively informative reports from every corner of the industry.
Yep.
We learned, thanks to mortgage broker Dwell, that 100,000 years were spent on waiting for mortgage applications to process in 2015 in the UK. That's enough time for Mount Everest to grow 1,313 feet or for our crane correspondent to come groveling back for their job.
It's not happening.
It really isn't. That was a serious mistake. And finally, in case we had any questions about robots taking over, we found out that Roomba vacuum cleaners collect spatial data on the floors they clean. It's why Diary's ultra-secretive floor plan has a strict no-robot policy.
Now, as if the giddy days of summer weren't enough, August was the month of the Jubilators, in case you were wondering. And the fun continued with Gus, the polygonal gorilla statue unveiled at Finsbury Avenue Square, Broadgate, which probably beats out stiff competition as our Statue of the Year. Diary had just seen War for the Planet of the Apes, though, so was probably wary of doing anything that might upset our simian cousins slash future overlords. We brought news from the valedictory ceremony of retiring Supreme Court President Lord Neuberger of what is known as the Neuberger Scale, a way that viewers watching proceedings online at home could chart the strength of submissions before the court by the extent to which his lordship was slumped in his chair. Perhaps sensors in judges' chairs could be rolled out to speed up justice. It certainly might have meant a decision in the trial of Holyoake v. Candy much quicker. With the sun shining, the recently ended Wimbledon was clearly still on the mind of EG's rising stars, as not one, not two, but three of these up-and-coming movers and shakers cited Swiss tennis legend Roger Federer as their biggest inspiration. But why? Because he's down-to-earth, friendly, hard-working and uber-successful, apparently. Not to mention ludicrously rich, which they didn't. As more and more buildings turned pret-a-manger, Diary got a sneak peek inside the chain's new London headquarters and spotted a very prominent rules of engagement notice to staff. They encouraged people to stop emailing and instead walk and talk to their colleagues, as well as instructions not to smoke, dive, photobomb, or pet heavily. Quite right, it would put everyone off their sandwiches. Speaking of things forbidden, that's the one-word message Gerald Eve's Jerry Sherder got when he tried to log on to the Valuation Office Agency website in an attempt to check out the new and much-derided Check Challenge Appeal system. Computer says no, and indeed, when asked if the system works, so do most surveyors.
September is still pretty close to summer, so the reports kept coming in. This time, we learned that 1 in 10 first-time buyers admit to crying at some stage of the mortgage process. Now, I put my data reporting hat on.
Yep.
That's 27,000 emotional wrecks in 2016 alone, or 93.75 days of nonstop collective crying, assuming everyone cries for 5 minutes.
Which I'm sure is the national average.
It's my average.
That's your average. Well, your daily average.
Weekly. Another fun bit of research taught us that sitting 25 feet from a high performer at work will boost your productivity by 15%. Sitting by a toxic worker, of course, cuts productivity. That's why we moved our crane correspondent to the corner before sacking them.
You sit within 25 feet of me.
Do I?
Yeah,
that's
sorry.
That's why I'm such a high performer. Thanks.
Pleasure. Glad to help.
When we finally had time to drag ourselves away from all this research, EG hosted its annual awards. It was a night of glitz and glamour and a night for us to eavesdrop on our industry friends. One auctioneer proclaimed, "Have you seen my Dennis the Menace bow tie? It's my favorite thing. I don't think I own anything else that so perfectly captures my company culture, apart from maybe my matching cummerbund. Have you seen my cummerbund?" A chief exec revealed his weekend habits, explaining, "Sometimes I will just order 10 things from Amazon at the weekend because I'm bored." What he didn't seem too interested in is the latest fad we learned about in September, extreme house selling. According to thehouseshop.com, you can throw in a luxury yacht or a supercar to spruce up your sale. Sell your house through a lottery. Or take co-founder Nick Marr's advice. Dress up in a panda costume and pose in your property photos. I couldn't possibly comment on how often we dress up in panda costumes, but if or when we do, we would or do feel pretty extreme.
To the max. Everything is better with panda costumes.
It really is.
And speaking of dressing up, for Diary, October is just one long run-up to the final day, by which we mean Halloween. And this year, the annual Fright Fest brought a certain press release back from the dead. Yes, those rascals at Hillary's had held back the creepiest items people had found while moving into a new house to score yet more coverage. Did Diary refuse to play their game on point of principle? Of course not. Any excuse to put a box full of animal skeletons, a collection of shed tarantula skins, and a group of dolls with their eyes removed onto the page. Still think those taxidermy beavers are the creepiest of the lot, though.
That and the Betamax tapes.
News came in from the Department of the Blooming Obvious. From British Land, which went to all the trouble of surveying 2,000 shoppers to find out that Halloween is more popular than it used to be. After handing out 150 chocolate bars to trick-or-treaters in 2 hours, Diary could have told it that. TFT got into the spirit, and Sean knew how to get Diary to RSVP to its Halloween party. The invitation came ransom note style, spelling out a chilling quote from Norman Bates himself. Diary can't possibly attend every shindig it gets asked along to, but this one was a must-do. After all, we all need to go a little mad sometimes. Earlier in the month, Londoners got a real-life scare as the skies turned, well, sepia, like some kind of viral marketing for Blade Runner 2049. Twitter and Instagram were flooded with photos and quips to the hurricane-based phenomenon. But Diary's favourite response came from real estate consultant John Forbes, who drew certain parallels with past events. 30 years since Black Monday, the hurricane and my first day at Coopers and Lybrand, he tweeted. Another hurricane seems to be building and the stock market looks very toppy. On the other hand, I have no plans to rejoin PwC. But after the initial excitement, a bit of a red sky in the afternoon pales in comparison to what the London skyline experienced in an issue of the Marvel comic book Astonishing X-Men. Yes, Diary casts its net far and wide to bring you the quirky stories in property. And this time, its net caught a giant butterfly attacking the shard. Don't worry, though. The X-Men had it handled.
I knew they'd do it.
I'm sure.
In November, we heard rumors that Muhammad Ali would step back into the ring to raise money for Birmingham's Children's Hospital.
Gasp.
How can that be, we asked ourselves. Luckily, we had our detective gear ready and we went hunting for answers. Turns out, Colliers International's investment property management team has a man named Muhammad Ali.
It all becomes clear.
Yes, he bowed to fate, took up boxing, and sparred at a white-collar boxing charity gig. Strutt and Parker earned themselves a few headlines by pointing out that millennial couples could save up to £64,000 for a deposit in a few years if they give up just 6 luxuries.
How so?
Well, that was the question I asked because I was born in the 90s, as we've referred to constantly. Well, they had the answer here. Cancel one night out a week, which will save you £115 each time. Cut out takeaway meals, shop-bought lunches, and an annual foreign city break, and your £16-a-week lottery habit.
How's that £16-a-week lottery habit working out for you so far?
It's.
I guess you're still here.
Exactly. I still don't have a deposit. Oh, and you also need help from your parents, they said.
Of course.
Of course. So next time you're wondering why you're still renting at £800 a month, excluding bills, to live with your 5 housemates an hour from work instead of in your own home with a £91,000 deposit like your bosses who got a 4-figure deposit around the time you were still learning to walk, just remember, you too could be in their position if you just stopped feeling entitled and lived an ascetic lifestyle. Let's be honest, the housing crisis is your fault, you and your avocados. We kept hearing all sorts of things about Hong Kong buyers this year on a complete tangent. They had a habit of coming to London and buying the biggest, flashiest buildings the city has. The cheese grater.
I bet they didn't need any help from their parents.
No, they didn't. There was the cheese grater. There was the walkie-talkie. They didn't take a bite out of the gherkin, though. Either way, Hong Kong money was everywhere. But one potential investor wasn't impressed. He reportedly flew into London to look at a trophy asset and left without a second's hesitation. Why? The feng shui was all wrong in the area, he said. The angles of the roads and rail lines made it impossible for him to even consider it. Maybe we should go rate the feng shui of our major London buildings and save investors the hassle. That might be our plan this Christmas.
I sense a new EG product in the offing.
Definitely.
Which brings us to the here and now of December. And that can mean only one thing. In the words of Noddy Holder, it's Christmas! King's Cross presented the most eye-catching tree of the season. Well, tree cum audio-visual art installation. To Diary's eyes, it nigh immediately brought to mind the psychedelic world of Chorlton and the Wheelies. Google it later, Carl. And there can be no higher compliment than that. The good folks at Jackson Stops introduced a new selling point for houses, Santa friendliness. Comparing complex data on population density, so the reindeer can quickly hop from roof to roof, and abundance of chimneys, they concluded that while Three Rivers, Bracknell Forest, and Surrey Heath are very much on Father Christmas's naughty list, Hull, Hastings, and Stoke-on-Trent top the charts for Santa-friendly homes. 2018 property boom in Hull. You heard it here first, or second if you happen to read the Diary page from a couple of weeks ago. Diary stretched the Christmas theme to breaking point by musing that Shaftesbury should perhaps get a thesaurus in its stocking after exhaustive analysis of the West End Investor's annual results by Carl revealed that it used the term exceptional no fewer than 15 times. 6 of those to describe its exceptional portfolio, and at one point twice in the same paragraph. Truly exceptional. And in completely non-festive news, we passed on sharp-eyed lawyer Simon Ricketts' spot that Sadiq Khan's London plan referred, at one point, to the King's Cross St Pancras opportunity area. Twitter VP Bruce Daisley raised eyebrows with his keynote at EG's Offices and Workplace Summit, blasting the horrible, wretched workspaces delivered by most of the people in front of him. But cat videos and memes meant he still went down a storm. Well played, sir. And finally, we heard from Churchill Home Insurance. Not that our claim had been turned down, but that 3 million Brits have taken action over the state of a neighbour's property. Now that is one unpopular guy. Of course not. It means that that's the number of homeowners who have been so offended by the exterior decoration of a neighbour's house that they have tried to have it removed. With particular opprobrium reserved for flagpoles, brightly painted facades and garden gnomes. And nearly half of them did it because they were worried about property values. But timely advice came in the mention that nobody likes the neighbour who leaves their Christmas decorations up all year. So remember, don't let your inflatable Santa outstay his welcome. And we won't either.
Of course not.
That was the year that was, according to Diary at any rate. Here's to an even better 2018.
Cheers.
Cheers.